This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the DRF Players Podcast. It's the March 2nd edition. I'm Mike Hogan, joined in studio by Mr. Lonnie Goldfeder. Welcome, Lonnie.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Pete is on vacation. Pete is laying on a beach somewhere in Mexico.
He's a world traveler, that Pete.
He absolutely is. Yeah, he's got a few weeks away because he has Mexico, and then he's going to Southern California. He's going to be there for a little while. He's going to be there for the big contest that they're doing, the joint one with Gulfstream Park, in a few weeks. Yeah. And then he'll be back in studio in 2 or 3 weeks. But in the meantime, thank you for joining. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
It's always fun.
It should be a fun one today. We got a lot of races to cover, essentially all at least the big races were all at Gulfstream Park this last weekend. So we're going to have Byron King joining in a few minutes to talk those, DRF's own Byron King. And then later in the show, we'll have Ruben Mendez Jr. on. Good story. He won a free entry to the NHC Qualify contest and used it to secure a spot at next year's NHC. So
congratulations, Ruben.
Yeah. So we'll talk to him about how he did it. Yeah. Kind of a fun story. But in the meantime, yeah. How are you doing? How did you play any of the races last week?
I played one of the races last week. I did not play most of the chalk. I mean, you need a blackboard for that card because it was like a chalk fest.
Well, there was an even more chalky card over the last weekend.
I played Giant Run.
Yeah.
He was 9-1. I thought he was a ridiculously high price in that race, and the Chad Brown horse was really good.
He was.
I mean, who beat him? I mean, you know, but that's history. My history is basically play a long shot and get beat by Chad Brown. That's you know, you look back at my history going back years since Chad Brown's been around, and you'll see almost every weekend something like that happen.
Yeah, I made a case for him on the Friday podcast.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
9-1. I thought the horse, based on all of his numbers and the way he's run, and again, Bravo, who's not been my favorite jockey of late, actually got the horse out. He got him on the pace. Mm-hmm. And that basically. Basically, you got him the trip he needed, you know.
Yeah.
But that said, it took a good performance to beat him.
He lived up to his name. It was a Giant Run.
Yeah.
It was just not quite good enough.
You come from the outside post. You have to use the horse a little bit. But that said, I think he got the trip he wanted. And there's no excuses. He still paid. The exacta was good.
Yep.
And the place price wasn't bad. So, you know, that was my cashing at Gulfstream Park this past weekend.
Yeah, well, before we get Byron on, we'll talk the big races with him. There were some other 13-race card, even aside from the big stakes winners. There were some nice runs by some non-stakes runners on the undercard. You know, we had Go Around, who's a half-brother to Go Between.
Yeah.
For Bill Mott. Hello. We have Byron King on? Hello, Mr. King. All right, welcome to the DRF Players Podcast, Byron. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking a lot of racing, and it's primarily the Saturday card at Gulfstream, all of the stakes races that we saw there. In fact, all of the graded stakes races last week occurred Saturday at Gulfstream. So if you wanted to catch up on everything that happened graded stakes-wise in North America, you only really had to focus on one card. So let's start with we'll start kind of in reverse order to some extent, or at least we'll start with the main event. Despite only getting six horses entered in the Fountain of Youth, I think that was what everyone was focusing on. And you know, Mohamen remained unbeaten, improved to 5-5. There was some talk, a little bit of talk after the race. You know, some people weren't as impressed with the race. Some people even came out and said they thought Zulu was the one to take away from out of the Fountain of Youth. What was your take, Byron?
Well, I thought, to be honest with you, I mean, I know the race didn't come up with a flashy figure. I believe he ran another 95 buyer.
That's right.
But I was very impressed with a couple aspects of the race. It was a bit hard to decipher some of it because, for example, you had a couple horses in there that were well regarded that just clearly didn't really show up, that being two awesome horses, Awesome Banner and Awesome
Speed.
Ganger.
Speed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, I thought this is a horse that can rate, he can sit close, he can make an early move, which is kind of what I thought here. Both he and Zulu went after, Austin Banner very early in the race and caught him on the turn. They were in a prolonged drive, and all this horse does is win. I mean, I can't really be critical of anything about it. Certainly it wasn't a flashy number, but one of the things that I posted or commented about on DRF was that, to be honest with you, there haven't been a lot of flashy numbers at all, period, this year.
Right.
The highest one is Nyquist from his return in the San Vicente, and even that was a 7-furlong race. So, almost every route that we've seen for these three-year-olds have been in the, low to mid-90 kind of buyers this year. So, as far as I'm concerned, he did nothing to dissuade me from thinking that he is certainly deserving of being, 1-2 in the pecking order of the Derby favorites.
I agree. And, I'll even go so far as to say I think he ran better than it looked by a lot of people. And I think a lot of people aren't giving him enough credit. You mentioned that early move. His second quarter, he went 23.19, and I think on Trackus it was 23.26. So depending upon which you use, his second quarter was not only the fastest second quarter in the race, where he moved up on the backstretch to really engage the front runners and get almost up even with Zulu. That was not only the fastest second quarter in the race, that was the fastest of any quarter of any horse in the race, including the opening quarter from pace setter Awesome Banner. So that's impressive.
Well, I thought there's a few things I think you have to keep in mind here. Number one, what did Moynihan need out of this race? He's basically, he doesn't even have to win the race to be in. So, what they're doing is I think they're conditioning him to the Derby. They're just moving him along. I thought it was a good race. He was clearly the best horse. In fact, he drew away in the stretch, and then he was actually geared down a little bit late. So so his gallop out wasn't crazy, a crazy gallop out, but it was okay. But he did what he had to do. He tracked the pace. He took over. And, he was going against horses which, frankly, at this point in their careers, were not as good as him, and he did what he had to do.
Yeah.
Zulu ran a good race because it's his first time around two turns. He chased gamely on the stretch. I mean, he's a horse that clearly could improve. I mean,
right.
Moynihan is definitely in the process. He's ahead of him. He's way ahead of him right now.
Right. Moynihan. He's not a Jewish horse. Mohammed.
Mohammed. Well, Moynihan would be the senator. Senator Moynihan. Well, Moynihan would be, he'd be Irish.
I guess he's an Irish horse. He's not an Irish horse.
Yes, okay. But Mohammed, basically, I think he's ahead of these other horses right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Particularly in this race. So he came in with an advantage right there.
The other thing I saw in the race is when Mohammed made that strong middle move, I think Johnny V realized he needed to go, and he tried to blow the race open right there. He went up, he moved up, and he engaged Awesome Banner, put that one away. And on the turn, he was hoping, if I can cut the corner and maybe get a little bit of distance, that's my only shot to run away from a horse who has the class edge, has the seasoning edge, has, and probably is at least at this point in their careers, the better horse. So I think it was a fantastic thing he did. He ran on really well. But you're right, Lonnie. I saw Mohammed as, I don't think Junior ever went to the whip. He was geared down a bit late. Once he changed leads, the race was over. And not only that, he went 31 feet further than Zulu did.
Yeah, he went 3 wide the whole way. In fact, you rated early, and I think he realized that basically maybe they're going a little too slow, so let me get up.
Right.
He had to. I mean, you don't
want
to let these horses go because they could still get loose.
So to me, I think he did everything he needed to do in the race. I think it was a race that looked a lot better than that 95 buyer appears on paper. It's the third consecutive 95 buyer that Mohammed has laid down. I think some people, the knock on him is some people are saying he's not progressing.
Well, actually,
I don't agree.
You double up your number on your second start of the year.
Yeah.
You're supposed to progress in the third start, basically. So, you could take any philosophy you want, but, given the shape of the race, I think he ran fine. I agree with Byron in that regard.
And I think the other thing to consider here is, he's going to have a lot of foundation in him. when he heads to the Derby, let's assume that he goes back in the Florida Derby as expected. You know, he'll have had 3 mile and or two turn races this year, two at a mile and a 16th, and another at a mile and eighth in the Florida Derby, plus the Remsen at a mile and eighth last year. I mean, this is a horse that certainly will be very well prepared for the Derby, and not a question mark in terms of his staying power, at least in my mind. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, and you know, it's tough because I'm always somebody that wants to look for the non-logical horse or look for a little bit of a price, but I haven't seen any. Even Nyquist needs to prove it to me. You're right, Byron. He's got the best fig of any of the three-year-olds, but that came at one turn, seven furlongs. I think at 10 furlongs, I like Mohamed a lot better than I like Nyquist, at least right now. And we'll see. I mean, it's tough. You know, I'm looking forward to the Florida Derby, should they both go. You got a couple unbeaten horses, a couple highly regarded horses. Should be a fun matchup.
Should be a match race. I don't think anybody else is going to show up. Unless you know, it's maybe for third money, but
I think Zulu will go. He could maybe move forward in the second time routing.
I mean, you need points, but yeah. You know, I guess. But yeah, Zulu's a horse that totally has he's bred to run all day. Yeah. And you know, now, you know, second time two turns, I think will be kind of exciting to see what he does.
Yeah. All right, let's jump a little earlier on the card. Let's stay with the three-year-olds, but move to the three-year-old fillies. We saw a very nice three-year-old filly run on Saturday at Gulfstream as well. It was a mile. It was a one-turn mile. But boy, Catherine Sophia so far has done very little in her short career to make me think she's not the best three-year-old filly that we've seen based on the East Coast so far.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, I didn't mean to talk about that.
Go ahead, Byron.
Go ahead, Byron.
Go ahead.
No, I think for a second I thought you were going to say the best three-year-old filly we've seen, and then you said East Coast, and but certainly, I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you know, isn't it amazing? And this is one of the things that it seems it's this way year after year that. And I can't pinpoint why it is, but it seems like in the filly division, there tend to be more like just a few standouts. I mean, not to say that American Pharoah wasn't a clear standout last year. Obviously, that was the case. But it just seems like, you know, you've got the Rachel Alexandras, you've got the, you know, Songbird and this horse.
Untappable a few years ago.
Yeah, they just seem like they're kind of like, it's funny how there's more separation. It just seems like there's less parity in a three-year-old filly division typically from year to year compared to the Colts for a reason I can't understand. But nevertheless, I mean, clearly she's just blown away everything that's down there. You know, now comes the news that, you know, Pletcher is getting
off the tracks. Right.
Yeah, off the tracks, you know, who could become a new player down there. But I mean, clearly this horse is very, very good, and I doubt really there's. It would be an exciting matchup. It, you know, I was kind of disappointed to see that Songbird wasn't pursuing the Derby, but if we could have these two horses run in the Yokes, the Kentucky Yokes later in the year, that'd be or the spring. That'd be exciting too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, she got a 98 buyer, so at least on the figures, faster than Mohamed. Granted, it's hard to compare a one-turn mile versus a two-turn mile and 16th, but figure-wise, it's as good or close to as good as what even Songbird has done. I think her best was the 99 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. So figure-wise, she certainly fits with Songbird, who I think most people would, you know, it's not really an argument for most people. She's the top contender, but, you know, Catherine Sophia is putting herself right up there, and if she continues to improve and proves it around two turns.
Exactly, and she hasn't gone two turns yet. She really didn't beat much this weekend, to be honest with you. She looked great, but, you know, I mean, maybe Dearest is the only horse who had a buyer even close to her going into that race with an 88. And every one of Catherine Sophia's buyers were over 90 coming into the race. So,
sure.
I mean, she kind of laid over the field on paper as well as on the track. But, you know, she still needs to be tested around two turns. That's a big test. She'll be 1-5, and if there's somebody good, maybe we'll be able to make a bet in that race.
Well, you know, I just like that I've seen that she's a little bit rateable. She showed some trouble in her last start. She can go wire to wire if they give her the lead. She seems to be a handy little filly. And, you know, I even tweeted after the race with the 98 that she earned being higher than Mohamed. You know, maybe she ducks Songbird and takes on the boys in the Derby. I don't think that's going to happen, but you're right, Byron. I'm excited to see all of them match up, especially if, let's say, Off the Tracks improves in her second start as a three-year-old, in her first start for Todd Pletcher. It could be an exciting division, and it could be one where you mentioned parity. We might have ironically, we might have a lot more parity in the three-year-old filly division than we do in the three-year-old male.
But I agree with Byron. You always have these standout three-year-old fillies, and this goes back as long as I've been riding horse racing. You go back to the 90s, and it's the same thing.
Yep.
You know, you always have this super talented filly, and, you know, a lot of times they can't. It's hard for them to maintain their form as they get older, but at this time of the year and into the fall, they're usually could be pretty dominant. So a Songbird could just totally dominate this division. I still don't see why I don't put Catherine Sophia there yet, but not until she took those two turns.
No.
But I'm with Byron on that as well.
She's got some improving to do, but I like...
But she's done nothing wrong.
I like that it's no longer a one-horse race.
That's right.
All right, so just prior to Catherine Sophia, we had another sprint, graded stakes sprint, and it was the Gulfstream Park sprint. XY Jet had a little trouble out of the gate, but recovered, went wire to wire, kind of, you know, maybe geared down a little late, got a 105 buyer, odds of 1-2, did little to dissuade his new connections, well, part of his new connections, from sending him to Dubai for targeting the Golden Shaheen. What was your takeaway from the race, Byron, and what do you think of his chances in Dubai?
Well, traditionally, American sprinters over there just have a very good record as long as it's been on dirt. You know, I mean, they certainly have to regard this horse as a major, major player. He's very, very fast. I didn't think his stretch run was overwhelming by any means, but the splits were very quick, and that's just the way he runs. I mean, he just throws down the gauntlet, and, you know, he goes. You know, I mean, it's. I guess the question for a lot of people in that this horse has shown, you know, such dramatic improvement and has been running on basics, and, you know, will he go over there in this hay, oats and water environment and at the same level of success? But, you know, I think he's just razor sharp right now. It's he's just blowing horses away. He certainly has to rank. I'm not sure of all the Americans that will go for that race, but, you know, typically Americans on dirt against Europeans are usually pretty potent.
Absolutely.
And given his running style, I think the straightaway and a straight run is to his advantage.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
He's certainly busted out as a 4-year-old, I'll tell you that. And yeah, he ran crazy fractions. Even with the slow start, he was much the best in that race. And he laid over the field on paper going in, so there was no big surprise in that race.
Right. No surprise at odds of 1-2. It'll be interesting to see who shows up. You're right, Byron. I know Godolphin has a nice runner in Marking, and I think that they're targeting the mile race for him. But it would be interesting to see him show up in the Golden Shaheen, as a somewhat lightly raced North American horse, seemingly on the improve. That would be a good matchup, at least, personally, I'd like to see that. But we'll see. I think they might be leaning towards a different race for him.
I watched his race the other day in Dubai, and I can't say that I came away very impressed. You know, he was under a ride very early in the race, and though he kicked clear late, I mean, if I had backed him, and I certainly didn't, I mean, he was like odds on, but I mean, I would have been sweating bullets watching him under a drive, you know, a quarter mile into the race. You know, I mean, the mile might be a better bet for him. He just doesn't He just didn't seem like he had the speed to keep up, or perhaps he didn't care for being behind horses, but hey, he's certainly going to be behind X-Y Jet early, that's for sure.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I think I would be playing against him. I did not come away very impressed with marking. If he runs in the sprint, I would be reluctant.
Well, I think he's been a little bit of a bad actor, you know, and he's...
Oh, he is that. He was poor to load, I think, and then broke very so-so, you know.
Yeah.
But, yes, he is apparently... And he was very washed. I mean, he looked like he'd... I mean, he just was just bathed in sweat when he got to the gate. And I generally just like to stay on horses that don't cause problems for themselves. It's easy enough to lose a horse race with a bad ride, a bad trip. Much less with when they lose their mind, you know. So I would be against marking.
I hear you. You know, I guess of course it all comes down to price, and in the U.S. market, he's probably going to be a little underlaid. As a lightly raced horse that seems to be on the improve, I'm not sure we've still seen the best of him yet, which I guess is the case for him. But if everyone's thinking that way and he's odds on, or a shorter price than XY Jet, then I'm with you. All right, let's.
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting thing. I'd be curious to get your off take. And I have to say that I haven't bet any Dubai races yet this year. You know, I've watched the ones with the premier Americans, pardon me, just for. You know, to put in, to get some thoughts in preparation for the Dubai World Cup card. But, you know, it's obviously a very, you know, the U.S. market is, as you say, is going to heavily influence. And it gets to be a bit of a patriotic thing a little bit. And also just familiarity with these horses that, boy, I just can't see a lot of value that you're going to get backing U.S. horses, to be honest with you, running over there, you know.
Well, I guess if you watch YouTube, you could find something, you know, because that's the whole thing. The U.S. market, as you said, is dominated by U.S. horses, and that's where there's always value, and you get these bombs. But agreed, because that's the familiar horses. I'm with you. I have not. Wage in Dubai. I've watched it casually more than even seriously. I don't feel I'm on top of it enough to actually seriously bet it. But like you say, though, there's opportunity because the U.S. market is skewed by the fact that it's kind of like the patriotic thing. We have to bet our own horses because we think they're so good. And particularly in sprints, it happens all the time.
Well, I think that provides an opportunity for a horse like Rich Tapestry, who seemingly likes the Dubai surface. Won his prep when he was facing marking, when marking had that horrible start and threw the rider at ridiculous odds, I think 1-5 or something like that. He's one that could be similarly overlooked in the Golden Shaheen and certainly will present value, if nothing else, even if you think that he's not good enough to win, he presents value underneath if you're inclined to play the tries or even the exactas. So. Let's stay in Dubai since we talked a little bit of Dubai. Let's talk about California Chrome. That was the big Dubai news of the week. What was your take, Byron, on his prep for the Dubai World Cup?
Well, I mean, it was a prep, so I'll give him the pass on that. But it was not a particularly fast race. I know he carried a lot more weight, but if I'm not mistaken, there was another race on the card that went pretty equivalent, if not slightly faster time. He obviously wasn't geared down, and I mean, I think it's important to realize that it was a prep and it was a means to an end, that there's no doubt about that. But, you know, I wasn't blown away. And I'm not one of these guys that, you know, I know that Espinosa didn't really ride him out that hard, but I mean, I'm not one of these people that often finds that there's so much more left in the tank the next time after they're geared down. I think it can be a little bit deceptive. But, you know, he certainly did what he was supposed to do, but I would be against him in the Dubai World Cup. I think you've got, you know, he's got such fan appeal anyway. You know, he's the Derby winner, and he'll have be coming in off of victory, and you know, I think he's just going to be grossly overbid. And you know, if I had, you know, without seeing the entire lineup, but I mean, you know, compare him to say Mashawish or Mashawish, however the pronunciation is done. Yeah, there's a horse with very good form currently who, you know, isn't a household name in terms of the winning the Derby and all those kinds of things, that to me, based on current form, is, you know, as good as California Chrome. And you know, he's just one example. You know, I mean, obviously there'll be some other very good horses in that race, and it should be an exciting one. But I would be very much against him. I just, you know, just from a value standpoint. Now, I don't think he certainly didn't do anything wrong the other day. You know, he won his prep, he won it easily, but no thanks. I can tell you who I won't be betting, and of course he's supposed to run this week. I just despise Keen Ice. I don't think I'll ever be touching him. So, but anyway.
I actually thought that was an outstanding prep for California Chrome. I disagree with you. I think that he got out of that race what he needed. Number one, he was on the rail. I think he tried to go to the lead. He got outgunned. He adjusted. He tried to get outside to go to the lead. Another horse came to the outside of him. He adjusted again. He got to his favorite three path. Mm-hmm. Went there. He looked like he looked bigger, stronger. I mean, the horse looks like he's grown. He changed leads beautifully on the stretch. This is a healthy horse. I think physically, this horse is in as good a condition as he's ever been in, and I think he's going to be very tough to beat in the Dubai World Cup. I would take him over Mishawish. I understand it's a value thing, so I totally agree with you. It might not be a bettable race, but I would be a little hesitant to bet too much against him. Certainly, you know, with some of the American horses, that's for sure. I think he's, based on what I saw in that race, granted it was a slower pace, but he did everything very much right, I thought. He made the adjustments. This looks like the California Chrome of 2 years ago, but bigger and stronger, and I think this horse is going to run big in Dubai, and I think he's going to win.
All right, I like it. We got a little disagreement on the podcast. I love it when we have some disagreement. I'll actually kind of land in between the two of you. I felt like you said, Lonnie, he kind of did what he needed to do, but Byron, I think the word you were generally talking around was, it was a very workmanlike performance. It wasn't flashy, it wasn't jaw-dropping, it wasn't like, wow, this, I've seen the winner of the Dubai World Cup. I think he can win. As a fan, I think it would be a great story if he won. I think, Byron, you're right, he's probably going to be a little bit overbet, and I think he's vulnerable, but I could certainly see, and part of me is rooting for a California Chrome victory in the World Cup. So, it'll be interesting, and you know, we haven't mentioned Frosted, who I think will...
I think California Chrome looked a lot better than Frosted did in his Dubai race.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if Frosted is...
And I'm a big fan of Frosted. You know?
Frosted's another one that might take a lot of money as a
well,
name.
Again,
US
like
horse.
We talked about before, the American horses on our pool are going to dominate. Yeah. I mean, that's unfortunate, to, you know, if you like them. But if you could YouTube it and find somebody else, you're going to get paid.
All right.
That's for sure. That's for sure. I think, you know, that's the other thing. There's so many American horses in there that, I mean, you're talking, you could get an upset from a European or a Dubai-based horse. You could get a really sad payoff if you were able to pull off the upset in there. That's for sure. I mean, I think I'll definitely be looking, trying to find which one might have the potential there to do it, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's jump back to Gulfstream. We got a couple other graded stakes that we want to just touch on real quickly. Heart to Heart, Wire to Wire, third straight graded stakes win, I think sixth graded stakes win of his career. You know, I guess that's just what happens when you let him basically run away at, you know, lay down 24 flat, 48 flat. He's going to be really tough to run down in the stretch, and he proved it on Saturday. He's still looking for his first grade one, though. Do you guys think that he is a grade one level turf miler, or is he maybe a cut below some of the best we've seen in North America?
I think he's grade one caliber. I think he's a situational horse. So
yeah,
I agree.
I mean, if he has his... if the things are in his favor, he's very, very good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Luke Valle, who he beat in the Fort Lauderdale, you know, came back and won the grade one, what they call it, the Gulfstream Park Turf or whatever it was, you know. So, right. I mean, he's already beaten a, you know, grade one caliber horse in Luke Valle. So, you know, I think he could certainly do it if the circumstances are right. And he has had very favorable circumstances, like, several times in a row. But, you know, he makes his own luck, you know. I mean, to be honest with you, I think if I were an opposing, you know, if it were a big grade one that I wanted to win, you know, I think I'd, and you'd have to think if Ramsey is in it, he'll find himself some rabbit or, you know, the shining copper or something to send out there and say, all right, prove to me you can rate, you know. So,
yeah,
but
I agree with you, yeah. I think he's got to have it his own way. I mean, you know, any horse that's keen enough to be able to get the lead in Wire Field is always good, you know, it's great. But, you know, if he gets a grade one race where he's a lone speed, he's going to be very dangerous. But I agree with Byron. I think that if I'm a trainer and I have some serious eyes on winning a graded stakes with Heart to Heart, I would certainly consider a rabbit if I can get one in there. You know, he hasn't passed a horse in one.
Yep.
I mean, that's the thing. You want to see that.
Well, I think he's going to get tested for class soon because I think they're targeting the Maker's Mile at Keeneland, and he's likely to face Teppan there.
Oh.
Among others. So,
Teppan can stay off the pace.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah. You know, and at a mile, I don't know. I don't know if male or female in North America, I don't know if anyone could beat Teppan. So, we'll see. But, you know, he earned a 104 buyer. I think, third consecutive triple digit buyer for him, third consecutive graded stakes win. He's a really good horse that seemingly is peaking at five. He could be a big player the rest of the year.
And in that race, if he stretches out next time, the Visadero ran huge.
Oh, yeah.
Coming off the layoff.
No, he needed the race.
Probably a mile too short for him, but he ran huge at the end. Yeah. I think it was a very good late run.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of these horses, I think for those, a lot of the ones that ran in this race, I think are going to be, don't be surprised to see them in the, you know, in the, the Woodford Reserve, the race before the Derby, on you know, that's the logical, you know, it's a mile and an eighth race that, you know, draws the cream of the division at that you know, mile and an eighth kind of division and distance, and I'm sure these horses will be there along with some others for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we only have a few more minutes, Byron, before we need to let you go, and we're going to jump to our next guest, Ruben Mendez. But there were some other graded stakes, including the return of a Breeders' Cup winner in Catch a Glimpse. Did everything she needed to do and pulled away late in the Here Comes a Bride. What do you think about, I mean, is she essentially the three-year-old filly to catch on the turf this year, or what was your takeaway from that race?
Well, you know, the one thing that was a bit odd, I thought, about her race was that she the tail part of the second turn, she kind of blew it. I mean, she kind of really drifted out kind of significantly, and I briefly thought, you know, what's going on here, you know? And now she did go on again, you know, and I don't know if it was a momentary distraction or what. I mean, but it definitely had to give, I'm sure, them a bit of a scare that, you know, like something amiss or whatever. But, you know, I thought that was a race she should have won. I thought she had a favorable draw to where she's a little headstrong. So when they raid her, you know, it helps her that she can be outside and they can kind of lay off. And she did settle down once they got down the backstretch. She might have been just a touch keen early, but you know, she's obviously very good. I'm sure they're going to keep her, you know, running on the turf, running. I doubt they're going to make any transition to the dirt with her. At least I would be surprised to see that because,
right,
you know, everything you look at in terms of her style and pedigree, you know, she just looks to me to be, you know, a turf horse. I mean, maybe they make a transition to to run on the synthetic at some point. But I think that, you know, there's still a lot of good, there'll be a lot of good three-year-old fillies to come on the scene, I think, on the grass. And I'm not so sure that she's head and shoulders in front of them, you know.
Yeah.
But she certainly,
She got some learning to do. I mean,
sure.
She was pretty green. She drifted out, like you said, on the turn going into the stretch. She changed leads like three times in the stretch. I mean, she basically, either she was hard to handle or, you know, just very keen or whatever. But, you know, to me, she's a horse that if she could get it together, she could improve dramatically, believe it or not. But I, at this point, I think she's still learning.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
She is. And, that, you know, it's always nice to see a Breeders' Cup winner come back. And,
I thought Lyra. Ran a good race.
Lyra did run a good race. Well, in terms of the wagering, you know, for most of the betting, at least until very late, Lyra was the favorite. Lyra was the odds-on one. Lyra was the one that looked like the wise guy horse, and you know, Catch a Glimpse seemed almost cold on the board for a while. You know, it corrected itself. But yeah, Lyra's one I think that could be very good. She's pretty lately raced. We didn't see any Chad Brown fillies in this race.
Thankfully,
I'm sure.
I mean, if they did, they might have won.
Right. I'm sure he's probably got
particularly if I bet somebody, they would have beaten.
He's probably got one or two that are likely to make a mark. But it's interesting. It seems like Mark Cassie gets a lot of these good young turf fillies, and he's now 2-for-2 with returning Breeders' Cup winners in 2015, 2015 Breeders' Cup winners in 2016. So,
yeah, I think that probably takes away some of the sting of, you know, he's had two huge disappointments on the Derby trail. You know, Aero Force was eased in his comeback race, and at the Fairgrounds, and then Conquest Biggie, who's going to try to regroup in New York this weekend, was, what was he, fourth in the Holy Bowl, you know. So, I think he's, you know, thankfully his turf fillies has come back, or he'd be in quite a depression, I would think, after with the seemingly just loaded stable that he had coming in. But that's the way the Derby can be, you know. Now these preps, everything's got to go right for you. You know, Aero Force had some missed time with a little respiratory thing, and at least my take is that it clearly hadn't cleared up, or there were maybe lost fitness or something, because he's much better than what he showed the other day. And I guess Conquest Biggie will have to find out if he's just Derby quality, but definitely. Catch a Glimpse and Pippin are definitely pleasures to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, at least with Aero Force, they know he's a pretty good turfer, and I think the plan is to just move him back to the turf, so they've at least got that in their back pocket, which is kind of a nice fallback plan. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, Byron. Really appreciate you joining the DRF Players Podcast. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and look forward to talking to you again.
All right, guys. Have a great one.
All right, you too.
Thanks,
care,
you too. All right, Lonnie, while we wait for Mr. Ruben Mendez Jr. to join us, let's also mention that DRF Bets is the sponsor of the DRF Players Podcast. There's a great opportunity right now to get $200 free from DRF Bets.
Can't beat that.
Sign up. Go to drfbets.com/200. Deposit $150. Bet $150 that day, you get the $150 matched, and then you get an extra $50 bonus. So for betting $150, you get $200 for free. Not a bad deal.
I think it's a great deal. I think people should sign up, if not tomorrow, because you got to sign up, but you want to bet that day.
Right.
So you want to sign up on a race
this
day
weekend.
You're going to play.
Yeah, we get
so,
the golf.
So you could bet. Do it Saturday. Do it Friday. Any questions? You can contact me if you want. lgoldfeder@drf.com, and I'll make sure you get what's coming to you.
Well, an easy answer, man.
I know you'll earn it.
And in addition, you get free DRF PPs and you get free DRF Live.
That's right. You can't beat that. Yeah, DRF Live, you know, you guys should watch it if you get a chance, because we got some. You watch Illman, Beer, Bernier on weekends. I mean, they're giving out gems like one after another. These guys are talking to the races all day. If you can't get enough and you want some quality handicapping, These guys will give it to you.
As opposed to what you get on the DRF Players Podcast.
Well, I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about maybe what you get on those TV channels. I'm not going to mention any names.
I hear you.
Okay, but these guys do a good job.
All right, well, we've got Ruben Mendez Jr. on the line. Welcome, Ruben. Thank you for joining the DRF Players Podcast. I'm Mike Hogan. You're here with Lonnie Goldfeder. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Ruben.
So first, I'll say congratulations. We had a little DRF Tournaments retweet contest. Retweet the tweet from DRF Tournaments about NHC Qualify. You get entered for a chance to win a free seat. You were the winner to the free seat, and you used it, you parlayed it into a seat at next year's NHC. Good job.
Thank you so much. Really still can't believe it, kind of.
Yeah, it's awesome when it works out that way. I mean, it's the
for
ROI
sure.
on free to an NHC seat is kind of off the charts. So before we get in and talk about that series of races, which includes one of the races that we didn't cover at Gulfstream Park on Saturday, before we talk about that, why don't you take a couple minutes to talk about yourself, how you got interested in horse racing, what your approach is, what you look for, what type of player you are, you know, just the two-minute primer on Ruben.
Well, my first memories are going to the racetrack, Pomona Fair, with my family and my grandparents, my parents. I apologize, I'm battling that. I just got a sore throat naturally yesterday. My first real interest in the races grew when Cigar kind of got onto the scene. One of my favorite races ever was when Lee DeJustice won the sprint. I had 50 to win on him there. So ever since then, I paid attention. Nothing too out of the ordinary. I think the funnest part about handicapping is not just evaluating the horses and who represents value, but evaluating how the rest of the handicappers assess value and how they see the race. Because, mm-hmm. you know, by definition, if it's parimutuel betting, you don't have to not only be able to identify who's the most likely winner, but who the market is overvaluing or undervaluing, especially in, you know, exotic plays, pick fours, pick fives kind of thing. So
right. Yeah,
you know, I also started at the Pomona Fair, so we have something in common. I spent much time beneath that grandstand, actually, and in that bar. So I know that place pretty well.
Yeah, one of my oldest photos I have at the racetrack is I'm in a stroller and I'm holding a program and I'm kind of yelling at my family to give me the new one. So they used to try to give me the ones from the day before, and I wasn't okay with that. So I was about 3 years old.
Wow. Yeah, I was older.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned value and finding value. I think that's something you obviously want to do in contest play, but you mentioned in parimutuel environment. I think that's a lot of that sort of thing. Obviously, the more experienced handicappers and horse players focus on that, but I think that sort of thing is overlooked by a lot of players because they're looking for, you know, who's the most likely winner.
He's also handicapping the handicappers,
right?
Which is like
yes,
is interesting.
Absolutely.
So you're taking a world view.
Yeah.
You're not just looking at the track; you're looking at your whole environment. And because it's competitive. It's different than playing the races every day. It's your approach is different, and yours is probably obviously you won right away here, so you handicapped them really well. So you had a good day. you're taking your PPs and you're expanding them to the field. But that's important because you're in a competitive environment, and your decisions are going to be based on what's going on.
And an interesting thing is, for instance, that Gulfstream race, if you look at the results of the leaderboard after that first race went, there was a lot of people that were on that big winner to start it off.
And
that typically is not indicative of the win pool or other kinds of betting. So other people are out there also looking for value.
Right. Well, let's talk about that race. So that was the first race of the NHC Qualify contest on Saturday. It was the ninth race at Gulfstream. It was the Sand Springs, $100,000 for fillies and older fillies and mares on the turf, 1 mile. It was an 11-horse race, and I think something like, seven of those 11 maybe were stakes winners. So even though it wasn't a graded stakes on paper, that was a really, really tough non-graded stakes race. And you jumped out to a nice early lead by picking the $27.80 winner in Fafiler. What was your approach in handicapping that one? How did you land on her? And how were you feeling after that first race?
Oh, it felt fantastic. When I first looked at it, I mean, I'm a big fan of Celestine, the one horse that broke from the rail there. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to play her. And then since I had gotten the free entry, I bought a second entry. And on there, I was looking for somebody else that had a little more, you know, upside from an odd standpoint. And one of my favorite owners that I see race all the time is Flaxman Holdings. They have great turf horses. They got this horse from Europe for the first race in America. She ran behind Lady Laura, Sarah Path, and her last 3/16 of a mile, she ran at 27.52. So that's pretty quick to run that far at 3/16. And when I look at the past performances, she won a pre out in Europe. She beat males twice. And I like the beat males or ran against males angle, not because there's anything particularly extraordinary about beating males, but rather that the owners or connections felt confident enough that they could. So right. To me, that kind of speaks to the human aspect of, you know what, our filly can compete with any of them. The price was just the icing on the cake there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe her dam, I mean, she's by Galileo. I believe her dam was an Irish Guineas winner.
Yes.
Amazing pedigree, you know.
Absolutely.
So if nothing else, it's one of these pedigree plays for a trainer who certainly has had success with a lot of these Europeans coming over to America.
You got to give Edgar Prado a lot of credit.
Yep.
He angled into the rail. He saved ground right away. And
and
that's the difference between winning and losing a race like that. You know, because on the first turn, you know, you come on out of the 13 hole, a lot of times you can get hung like five wide.
Yeah.
He got this horse right to the rail, saved ground, you know, was able to get up. You know, he was able to maneuver through traffic and you know, get there. But, you know, ultimately, but yeah, this horse definitely had a good trip. And a lot of a good run at the end. It was a tough loss for Partisan Politics, but a good win for Florida Fiddler.
Yeah, and I would imagine at the top of the stretch there, when she was kind of wide and a little behind horses, you probably were like, I don't know. But then once she kicked into gear and got clear sailing late, it seemed like the race was
after
over.
After she changed leads, boy, she rallied nicely. She, she was really keen at the end.
All right, so you jumped out to an early lead, and then after that, you kind of. You know, you had one place in the next four races, but you didn't have any winners for a little while. What were you thinking and how were you feeling? Were you like, okay, now I need to... did you start worrying at all? Did you start changing your approach? When you have a big lead and then you maybe lose a little ground, does it change at all the way you play in a contest?
For that contest, I truly felt that the second, third, and fourth leg looked rather... you know, choppy in a sense. So I didn't mind kind of missing there. I just, you know, when my horse was in fire, I was just hoping the favorite would get into the money, keep the place, and win payoffs were there so nobody else would be able to catch up. And really being at the top allowed me to kind of play the horses that honestly I liked the most. I wasn't reaching there. I also wasn't trying to play too conservative. I was actually betting horses that real money would have followed. So that's the nice part about being in the lead at that point is you don't feel pressured into, you know, reaching or anything like that. I liked Warren's Nicholas a lot at Oaklawn. That horse just ran into a better horse that day. And then Capitation was kind of the opposite of Fawfowler there. Had a rough trip around Gulfstream Park and was, you know, in the parking lot around both turns, I think.
So you kind of run the ball, you know, you're running the ball a little bit with the lead, you could do that, and then maybe some down and outs, you know, to the sidelines to gain some yards, and hope the favorite comes in the money so that you, and again, you're kind of handicapping what the other guys are doing, because you can watch the board after each race.
Now, you did some, middle of the contest, you did something in the sixth race at Santa Anita, it was the first of the Santa Anita races, that a lot of players won't do. This is ultimately the difference between why you landed the seat and why you didn't, because you, I think you were only about 80 cents ahead of the fifth place, and fifth place doesn't get you a seat. You picked you picked a 3-5 shot.
Absolutely. I mean, you want to beat those, but it's just, you know, sometimes it's like, don't get too cute. Every great racing handicapping book, Stephen Curtis, Bayer, you know, they remind you, don't get too cute. Sometimes you just take the free money and you move on. And that race really cheap. I mean, it was free $5. And all I could think about every time was the difference in the NHC results and all the different tournaments when the difference is $1, $2, $3. It's like, you know what? Don't overdo it. Just take the easy money. And then I did put a couple real dollars on some of the bigger prices though, just in case.
Yeah. Well, it's also a confidence thing. I mean, it helps you to actually get something on the board. You had three in a row where you didn't cash, and then you get something on the board. I mean, it helps your head a little bit, I think.
Absolutely. Because you don't feel like you missed out on something. You feel like, I was on point there. And that's really, I think, the biggest difference between the pick six and contest is the contest is mentally and emotionally draining.
Yeah.
You get discouraged and you have to, kind of be resilient and not allow it to distract you from who do I really like and who actually represents value.
Right. That's very important.
Here's the other thing it does, and it goes back to what you were saying earlier about handicapping the handicappers. Anybody that's following your picks and sees you ahead of them, they're confused now because you start off with a 12-1, nearly 13-1 horse on top, and then you pick a 3-5 shot. And if they're trying to figure out where you're going to go next, they have no
idea. Absolutely.
Well, they'll pick a 2-1 shot in the next race. Think, I got this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And then a couple races later at Oaklawn, you cashed a nice 1160 winner. That puts you back into it, but.
Mm-hmm.
You had a couple that didn't win. You had a nice place payout at Gulfstream in the nightcap. You missed in the second to last race. So coming into that last race, what was your look? I'm sure you were looking at the leaderboard. You were trying to calculate the kind of price you needed in order to get there. You had an even money horse in the race in Basmati that obviously you knew you couldn't play. Was it strictly a playing the board to try and find the best kind of price that you thought might put you into the NHC, or were you going with a horse that you liked already at that point and you just got the price that you were looking for?
You know what? I loved Too Fast to Pass from the moment I picked up the form. I really felt like Basmati was going to get overbet. I mean, you have a high win percentage trainer. You have a consistent bigger speed figure pattern from him. And honestly, horse players, we kind of rely on those consistent horses. Mm-hmm. And we kind of default to that when we go into safe mode. So I thought Basmati was beatable. And that's not even to mention Too Fast to Pass had just run two races with sub-22 quarters to open up. And then he also had run about three races in a month. And then Sadler gave him about a month off between starts. Bruno Giulio's workout analysis, I use that for my days where I played, contests or bigger things. He was on point with how well Too Fast to Pass was training. So really the question was only how much action was he going to take, and was that enough to get me into, fourth or third?
Is Santa Anita your home track?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because it sounds like, you're on top of that particular, this situation here.
What I was going to say is in that race there, Basmati was a legitimate solid favorite. It wasn't particularly that I didn't like him as much as I felt like he was going to attract so much action. The rest of the horses would actually offer value there.
Right. Yeah. And that's a good point, because sometimes you have favorites like that are truly vulnerable that you're mm-hmm. absolutely keying your race around. Other times it's like, this horse can win, but he's a horrible bet at the price that you're getting.
It's great to have that bullet in your pocket coming into the last race. You have a little bit of home field edge because you do handicap, it sounds like on a regular basis. So, and you were clearly able to bet that horse with confidence. And, I watched the replay. I didn't have that much confidence at the top of the stretch, but when he changed lanes, he did. The other two horses weren't going anywhere, but I think they were going kind of fast. It's hard for me to tell because, 21 and 43 and tracks I follow seems pretty fast, but it's Santa Anita or Gulfstream, I never know. But in this case, it looked like those horses were staggering at the end, and he basically got up.
Yeah, and then the whole stretch, I'm thinking, I actually think he has some horse left, I think. And, my favorite jockey, Abel Ascano, thank you. You're out there. Love you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because at the start of the race, Abel was really getting into him asking him from the very beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at the top of the stretch, it's like Lonnie and I were watching it. We're like, is he really going to have enough? I mean, I even know what happened, but it still seems, But great job, great handicapping, great handicapping the handicappers,
congratulations,
too.
Congratulations, way to go.
Thank you, I really appreciate it. It's amazing, to be able to say, I get 11 months to be excited about going to the NHC, so I'm really excited about that.
Now you could relax and you could play a contest. You could keep playing contests and basically you know, tweak your game a little bit. And
yeah.
then still win all the contests. What's to stop you?
Right. Well, are you going to...
That's absolutely the plan. That's absolutely the plan. If you can have two entries there, I mean, that's the contest. Of all contests, you want to have two entries there.
Yeah. I mean, there's an NHC championship just for winning the most, like Jonathan Kinchin did last year. You already got the win, so let's keep it going.
Have you ever been to the NHC before?
Back in 2007, I was in Vegas, and I did the Last Chance contest at Bally's. And I don't know if anyone else out there remembers, but that day, Conveyor's Angel at 48-1 got disqualified in the Tuzla handicap. Mm. And that was one of the last races, or the last race of that Last Chance contest. And she was my play. I was probably in about 15th or so, and I'm certain that would have catapulted me into the money there. But, you know, it happens, and the contests are fun because, you know, it's an alternative to how you normally would play. So, you know, it's just as much about beating your opponents as the dollar payoffs and the handicapping part. So it has more of a poker feel to it, which is kind of cool.
Right. Well, congratulations again. Very excited for you to make it to NHC, and good luck for the rest of the year in getting that second seed. I know we'll talk to you on Twitter. I talk to you all the time. I'm at DRF Formulator.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know you're Ask Ruben to Bet. Always great talking to you on Twitter, and thank you for joining us today on the DRF Players Podcast.
Thank you guys so much, and thank you, DRF Tournaments, for that free entry.
Yeah.
All right, thanks again. Good luck.
Good job.
Keep it going.
All right, guys. We'll talk later. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, Lonnie. Well, thank you for joining us today, sitting in ably for Mr. Peter Thomas Fornatel.
He's getting a suntan every place but his beard.
He is. Yeah, he's not worried about anything we're talking about today. Hope you'll be back. We've got a couple more weeks where Pete's not here.
Yeah,
he may or may not be on the podcast, but if not, you're always welcome. So
thank you. I appreciate it. I had a good time.
Thank you for joining, and thank you, DRF Bets, for sponsoring. And until next time, you've been listening to the DRF Players Podcast with Mike Hogan and Lonnie Goldfeder. Mm-hmm.